the Book of Judges. It's a tale of chaos unleashed, of violence unchained, and of a moral compass spinning wildly out of control. Ancient Israel's story? Perhaps. But as we peel back the pages, we'll find a mirror reflecting our own tumultuous times. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Sound familiar? Well, join us over the next few weeks as we study the Book of Judges, ancient wisdom for modern chaos. Our story begins now. Judges chapter 8, verse 1 to 21. Now, the Ephraimites asked Gideon, "Why have you treated us like this? Why didn't you call us when you went to fight Midian?" And they challenged him vigorously. But he answered them, "What have I accomplished compared to you? Aren't the gleanings of Ephraim's grapes better than the full grape harvest of Abiezer? God gave Oreb and Zeb, the Midianite leaders, into your hands. What was I able to do compared to you?" At this, their resentment against him subsided. Gideon and his 300 men, exhausted yet keeping up the pursuit, came to the Jordan and crossed it. He said to the men of Succoth, "Give my troops some bread. They are worn out, and I am still pursuing Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian." But the officials of Succoth said, "Do you already have the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna in your possession? Why should we give bread to your troops?" Then Gideon replied, "Just for that, when the Lord has given Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, I will tear your flesh with desert thorns and briars." From there he went up to Peniel and made the same request of them, but they answered as the men of Succoth had. So he said to the men of Peniel, "When I return in triumph, I will tear down this tower." Now Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor with a force of about 15,000 men, all that were left of the armies of the eastern peoples. 120,000 swordsmen had fallen. Gideon went up by the route of the nomads east of Nobah and Jogbeha and attacked the unsuspecting army. Zeba and Zalmunna, the two kings of Midian, fled, but he pursued them and captured them, routing their entire army. Gideon, son of Joash, then returned from the battle by the pass of Heresh. He caught a young man of Succoth and questioned him, and the young man wrote down for him the names of the 77 officials of Succoth, the elders of the town. Then Gideon came and said to the men of Succoth, "Here are Zeba and Zalmunna, about whom you taunted me by saying, 'Do you already have the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna in your possession? Why should we give bread to your exhausted men?'" He took the elders of the town and taught the men of Succoth a lesson by punishing them with desert thorns and briars. He also pulled down the tower of Peniel and killed the men of the town. Then he asked Zeba and Zalmunna, "What kind of men did you kill at Tabor?" "Men like you," they answered, "each one with the bearing of a prince." Gideon replied, "Those were my brothers, the sons of my own mother. As surely as the Lord lives, if you had spared their lives, I would not kill you." Turning to Jether, his oldest son, he said, "Kill them." But Jether did not draw his sword because he was only a boy and was afraid. Zeba and Zalmunna said, "Come, do it yourself. As is the man, so is his strength." So Gideon stepped forward and killed them and took the ornaments off their camels' necks. Let's picture this for a moment. You've just nailed the presentation. You've just closed the deal. You've finally mastered the skill you've been working on for months. Do you know the feeling? Do you know what I'm talking about? When everything seems to be clicking into place, when you feel unstoppable. I mean, those are great moments, aren't they? But they can be incredibly dangerous moments for our following of God. You see, there is a fascinating thing that happens in our relationship with God. You see, when we're weak, God's strength is magnified. But when we're strong, well, things get complicated, don't they? Tonight we're back with Gideon, and he lived this reality out in a dramatic fashion. Remember where we found Gideon at the start? He was in that wine press. He was trying to stay invisible from his enemies. And what did God call this hiding man? A mighty warrior. I mean, talk about optimistic, eh? But here's where it gets interesting. Our passage tonight ends talking about Gideon's strength again. Have a look down at Judges 8:21. As is the man, so is his strength. By the end of this chapter, things have changed. So what happens when Gideon feels strong? What happens when the scared man becomes the successful man? And more importantly, what happens to us? What happens when a man trusts his own strength over God? So that's what we're going to see in Judges chapter 8. And what we're going to see might feel uncomfortably familiar. Here's what happens, and I want you to watch this closely because it's one of the most tragic transformations in the Bible. God's mighty warrior, the one who has just defeated an army of thousands with 300 men, becomes something different entirely. A destroyer. His own people's destroyer. Now, from the outside, Gideon still looks impressive. He looks strong. He looks confident. He looks like a real leader. But that is exactly the problem. Because whilst this world sees strength, God sees a man who has forgotten who made him strong in the first place. But before we see where Gideon ends up, let's see how he starts. Because this transformation begins with a conversation. So we're continuing right from where we left off last week. And 300 men have just won a victory without doing a single thing. Have a look down to Judges 7:24. Judges 7:24, Gideon called on the men of Ephraim to come and help. And so what happens? They capture the two Midianite leaders. They capture Oreb and Zeb. Raven and Wolf is their English name. But now in Judges 8 verses 1 to 3, we get potential civil war. And here we see the first point this evening. Humility in weakness calms conflict. You see there, the Ephraimites, they are angry. They're angry because Gideon didn't bring them into the fight against the 135,000 men. Now, we know the reason. It's because God was showing them that it wasn't by strength, by human strength, the battle was to be won. That was a situation that demonstrated that man should not trust in his own strength over God. Do you remember what God said back in Judges 7 verse 2? He said, "You have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into their hands, or Israel would boast against me. My own strength has saved me." You can see the self-strength there, can't you? The potential there for pride. The potential that's there for all of us. Now, you see, this is a dangerous moment. When you've just won a massive victory, when you're feeling strong, when people are questioning your ability, well, that's when pride tends to pop up, doesn't it? But watch how Gideon reacts, verse 2. "But he answered them, 'What have I accomplished compared to you? Aren't the gleanings of Ephraim's grapes better than the full grape harvest of Abiezer? God gave Oreb and Zeb, the Midianite leaders, into your hands. What was I able to do compared to you?'" It's a great example of the proverb, isn't it? A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Do you see what Gideon's just done there? There is no defensiveness. There's no pulling rank. Instead, he lifted up their accomplishment. He pointed to God's work and he met anger with gentleness. And just like that, their resentment, their contending against him, subsides. What makes a leader, what makes someone respond like that? What gives someone the security to lift up others instead of defending themselves? See, that's what true strength looks like. When we're secure in God's strength, we don't need to defend our own. Now, if the story of Gideon had ended there, it would have been a good ending, wouldn't it? It would match the first half of the book of Judges. But we're in the second half. And so the writer continues. And we're going to see a big contrast between Gideon here and Gideon in the very next verse. But before we cross over the Jordan, there is a subtle warning sign right there in verse 3. See, right there in verse 3, Gideon has stopped using the name of the Lord again. What we normally see as the Lord, Gideon has gone back to being vague. He's gone back to calling him God. That's a warning sign for Gideon, because the last time he did that was with the fleece. And now he's doing it again. The background music is turning ominous. See, compromise, it starts small, just one word, just one subtle shift. Gideon stops saying Lord and he returns to the vague God. The same thing that he did with the fleece. Just one small compromise. That's how it always begins, isn't it? And so in the next section of this chapter, Gideon's humility gives way to pride and his words lose their gentleness. And we see our second point. Self-made strength seeks personal glory. Verses 4 to 12. As is the man, so is his strength. Do you remember those words? Because we're about to see them play out in a completely different way. Now, just so you know, verses 4 to 12, they match up with verses 13 to 21. We get Gideon interacting with Israel and then Midian. And then we get the same again. Gideon interacting with Israel and then Midian. And as we see that, we're meant to spot the progression. We're meant to see the degeneration of God's warrior into a self-serving destroyer. And it all happens as Gideon crosses over the Jordan. Something shifts when Gideon crosses over the river. See, the humble leader that we just saw, he's about to disappear. Just watch how quickly it happens. Verse 5. He said to the men of Succoth, "Give my troops some bread. They're worn out. And I'm still pursuing Zebah and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian." But the officials of Succoth said, "Do you already have the hands of Zebah and Zalmunna in your possession? Why should we give bread to your troops?" So Gideon turns up to this town, he asks for bread, and he finds a bunch of people who are unsure whether to assist him. The people are hesitant to help. Perhaps they fear what's going to happen if Gideon fails in his task. But did you see how Gideon responds to them? He doesn't call them to what God is doing. He doesn't treat them graciously as he did with Ephraim just a verse earlier. Instead, verse 7, he goes straight in for the threat. Then Gideon replied, "Just for that, when the Lord has given Zebah and Zalmunna into my hand, I will tear your flesh with desert thorns and briars." Wait, what? Where did that just come from? Is this still, you might be thinking, the same Gideon who diffused the situation a verse ago with humility? Well, the same happens again. Peniel, verse 8, leading verse 9 to another threat. He says to the men of Peniel, "When I return in triumph, I will tear down this tower." Do you hear what's happening to his language? I will tear. I will return in triumph. I will tear down your tower. You see, it's ambiguous. It's ambiguous whether Gideon chasing the kings of Midian down is the right thing to be doing. Whether pursuing them is actually what he should be doing. But that's not the big point here. The big point here is that Gideon cares more about his personal glory. That is why he responds the way he does. See, this isn't like Deborah's song at the end of the first half. This isn't threatening judgment for not doing God's work. Gideon could have quite easily said that, couldn't he? But instead, we are told this is personal. By the time we get down to verse 18, maybe look there with me, verse 18, we notice that in Gideon's eyes, these Israelites' biggest sin is, "You taunted me." Do you notice the change? Gone is the humble man who asked back in chapter 6, "How can I save Israel?" And in his place stands a man caring about his own strength, his own personal glory. And here's what makes that so tragic. Gideon knows what it is like to be on the other side. Gideon knows what it's like to hesitate, to be afraid. Do you remember where we found him at the start of the story? Hiding in that wine press. Do you remember his fear? Do you remember God's grace to him? The man who received mercy refuses to show it. He's just like that unjust manager that Jesus speaks about in the Gospels, isn't he? Not showing the mercy he himself was shown. But there's something even more chilling about this. Did you see what Gideon threatens them with? You see, when Gideon threatens these towns with thorns and briars, he's using exactly the same language that God used to describe what the Canaanites would do to Israel. Do you see the point? The deliverer, in his own strength, is starting to sound like the enemy. And in verses 10 to 12, we turn from Israel to Midian. And we get a small replay of the battle we saw last week. Gideon, he's still fighting Midian. He still has 300 men. There is still an unsuspecting army. There are still two leaders fleeing. But what's missing? What's missing is any direction from God. Any mention of God's purpose. This is all about Gideon now. It's all about his glory. It is all about his plans. And that is where self-made strength always leads us. Away from God's purposes, towards our own glory. You only have to look around and see what self-made strength makes people think they're able to do. But we're not done yet. Because self-made strength still has one terrible transformation in store. And that's from personal glory to personal vengeance. Point three. Self-made strength shows in personal vengeance. We just saw Gideon face Israel and then go to Midian. And now the same thing happens again. And Gideon is going to cross another boundary. Have a look at verse 13. He crosses the pass of Heresh. Now, the word Heresh in Hebrew is the word for the sun. Now, why does that matter? Well, because up to now, everything that Gideon has done has been at night. Cutting down the idol, he did that at night. The 300-man victory, he did that at night. But now it's as if he steps into the sunlight and what we see is not pretty. Do you remember Deborah's prayer? Judges 5:31. So may all your enemies perish, O Lord, but may all who love you be like the sun when it rises in its strength. Judges is a book of irony. We're about to see Gideon rise in his strength as the sun rises, but it is nothing, nothing like what Deborah is praying for there. So first of all, Gideon captures. Just notice that word there. He captures an Israelite boy. Exactly the same word to what he did to those Midianite kings, the verse before. And Gideon, he makes this captured boy write out a hit list. A hit list of 77 officials. Not enemy leaders, not Midianite soldiers, but 77 of Gideon's own people. And then what does he do? Well, he teaches them a lesson. That's what the NIV has. It literally is, he threshes them. The man we first met threshing wheat in fear is now threshing his people with thorns. Then he marches over to his next Israelite victims, Peniel, and he does what he said. He pulls down their tower. But he goes further. Do you spot that? Look what he does next. Verse 17. He also pulled down the tower of Peniel and killed the men of the town. Killing the men of the town is what Israel were called to do to God's enemies. But what's Gideon doing here? He's doing that to God's own people. This is the complete opposite of the conquest that Israel were meant to be completing. Gideon has gone from doing what God said, going the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand, to being the hand that oppresses Israel itself. You see, Gideon is contending with, Gideon is hacking down Israel instead. And in his personal vengeance, he goes beyond the threat he first made. That mighty warrior who initially trusted in God has become a hollow shell of strength, and pride is on the throne. But it's not done yet, because now he finally catches up with those Midianite kings. Have a look at verse 18. Then he asked Zeba and Zalmunna, what kind of men did you kill at Tabor? Men like you, they answered, each one with the bearing of a prince. See those words, they're ironically damning. Similar to Adonai Bezek at the start of this book, there is a message in their very words. They are looking at Gideon, and what do they see? Well, they don't see the humble servant of God anymore. Instead, they're seeing someone who looks a bit like a king. Someone who's just like them. And Gideon proves them right. Verse 19, Gideon replied, "Those are my brothers, the sons of my own mother. As surely as the Lord lives, if you had spared their lives, I would not kill you." Do you hear what he's just done? Did you spot what he just did there? He's just used God's name to justify his personal vengeance. Because self-strength takes justice into its own hands. Now, this might be why Gideon was so afraid at the beginning, when he was in that wine press, afraid to fight the Midianites. But this is certainly why he pursued the kings across the Jordan. See, Gideon has a vengeance plan in play that makes Liam Neeson in Taken look absolutely tame. And he has a very particular set of skills that he uses on anybody in his way, whether they are Israelites or Midianites. The man who once needed signs from God to act now uses God's name to justify his own vendetta. And you see there, right there, if he is speaking the truth, saying that he'd save them if he hadn't killed their brothers, well, then he's placing himself above God's law. But if he's lying, well, he's also used the Lord's name falsely. Either way, Gideon has let his personal strength and his vengeance trump what God has said. You see, he's compromising. He's compromising now because of strength, not because of weakness. And that's really important because it's God's prerogative to put to death, and it's God's prerogative to bring to life. Something we need to think about later as we pray. But it is not Gideon's place to let someone die or to let someone live. And to make matters worse, he turns to his son and he orders his son to kill these kings, to join in with his personal vendetta. And so in Jether, we see a callback to Gideon earlier. Have a look at verse 20. We have a compare and contrast. Why does Gideon's son not draw the sword? Well, because he's like his dad in chapter 6, because he is afraid. You see right there, we have the earlier Gideon and the now Gideon. Mr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Gideon, Jerubbaal, right next to each other. And that leads us to our verse. Verse 21, they say to him, "Come, do it yourself. As is the man, so is his strength. As is the man, so is his strength." The mighty warrior who once trusted God has become exactly what he was meant to fight against. And so in his own strength, to show his own strength, Gideon strikes down these kings. And he takes the treasure off the camels' necks. What do you think of Gideon there? He's such a mixed character, isn't he? He's Gideon and Jerubbaal at the same time. He's an Israelite and he acts like a Canaanite at the same time. I mean, the iron is so thick, that comment about the camel's necks, it's exactly what Sisera's mother, do you remember Sisera? It's exactly what Sisera's mother was hoping Sisera would do for her. Take some jewellery and give it to me, thanks. So here's our warning this evening. What is the distance between depending on God and depending on ourselves? Just a few small steps, isn't it? Just a few small compromises. A few moments where we choose our own glory over God's purposes. And that's what we've seen all the way through Judges, isn't it? Fear paralyzes and leads to compromise. Pride destroys and leads to compromise. When Gideon was weak in himself, what did he do? He relied on God and he delivered Israel. When Gideon was strong in himself, he relied on himself and he betrayed the very people he was meant to save. So here's the question we need to be asking ourselves. Where do we see ourselves in this story? Is it in our careers, when success makes us forget who's given us our ability? Is it in our relationships, where we think we can handle things all on our own? On the week before our 10th birthday as a church, is it in our church when we start trusting our own prowess more than God's presence among us? See, each one of those things is not just a choice, it's a step away from God, away from dependence, leaning on ourselves. See, our call as God's people isn't to serve ourselves, is it? Our goal is to serve others in humble reliance on him. Here's our hope, though. We serve a different kind of king, don't we? One who, when he was strongest, when angels stood ready at his command, chose weakness, chose the cross, chose to serve rather than to destroy. So the question for us tonight is simple, isn't it? Where are we placing our trust? Are we placing our trust in our own strength or in the God who shows his strength through weakness? We're going to celebrate that as we share the Lord's Supper this evening. But let's take those words to heart, because as is the man, so is his strength.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. Any questions can be sent to podcast@david-couch.com. I'll see you again next time.